well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Great to have you with us on the program today. Coming up in a matter of moments, Stephen Gutowski is going to join us from the Washington Free Beacon. We are going to kick around and dissect Wednesday's Democratic debate in Las Vegas, Nevada, where Michael Bloomberg was on stage for the very first time in the primary. Kind of looked like he was on the stage for the very first time in his life, honestly, given the absolutely abysmal performance. As I said on Twitter as I was watching this, there's a reason why the Bloomberg campaign commercials that are on your television sets and are all over your smartphone and your computer don't actually feature a lot of Mike Bloomberg himself. And I think it's the same reason why Bloomberg founded Mayors Against Illegal Guns, why it's Moms Demand Action, why it's Every Town for Gun Safety. I think Bloomberg is savvy enough to know that he's not a particularly likable guy. And he's not a someone who is a particularly inspirational individual when he gets up there on stage and starts speaking. And so he has sort of farmed out a lot of his advocacy to folks who can be the face of his movement. It's hard to do that when you're running for president, though. I mean, when you're running for president, it's you. And ultimately, you have to be up there on the stage and you have to engage with the other candidates. And it did not go well for Michael Bloomberg last night. So we sat down with Stephen Gutowski of the Washington Free Beacon to talk about Bloomberg's just absolutely pathetic performance. Who did have a good night? Here's a hint. Gun owners did not, because even though the Second Amendment really wasn't brought up on the debate stage, virtually all of these candidates, whoever gets elected will be the most anti-gun presidential candidate in our nation's history, unfortunately. So with that as the setup, take a look and a listen to our interview with Stephen Gutowski of the Washington Free Beacon. Hey, Stephen, thanks so much for joining me on the program, sir. It's good talking with you.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
You bet. Well, you know, I invited you to come on and talk about the debate last night in Las Vegas from a Second Amendment perspective, but we didn't see any Second Amendment questions in the debate last night, even though this was the first time that Michael Bloomberg was on stage, the sugar daddy of the gun control movement. The debate took place in Las Vegas, site of the Route 91 massacre not long ago. Were you surprised that not only did the moderators not really bring up gun control, but Bloomberg himself didn't take the opportunity to really, you know, bring up gun control and hammer what he's done for, quote unquote, common sense gun safety laws over the years?
Yes. I am a little bit surprised. I'm not terribly surprised because there have been, I think, two or three other debates where gun control didn't come up at all. Either. So at the very least, the media is not as interested in it because I think it's, we can all figure out why that is. There haven't been any major mass shootings in the last almost 2 months here. So that's probably why there's not much interest from the media, since those events tend to drive media coverage on guns almost exclusively, frankly. I am surprised that the candidates didn't try to take this approach. You know, Bloomberg, like you mentioned, he spent $100 million, according to his own campaign, over the last decade to push, the gun control movement in the United States, and really is like he deserves credit for being the pioneer on the issue on the left. I mean, there really wouldn't be a gun control movement in the way that we have now if it wasn't for Michael Bloomberg and his money. Like, that's just the reality. I mean, these groups are not grassroots funded groups, like the NRA is. There's a very stark difference there. And one that you, I think, saw play out in Virginia, where the funding was on the gun control side of things during the election. And then the grassroots was very clearly on the gun rights side of things after the election, to the point where the only significant grassroots sort of event where they tried to turn out people on the gun control side was the Moms Demand Act or the Evertown Lobby Day, which had 200 people attend compared to the 20,000 plus people who showed up for the BCDL rally about 2 weeks later. So I am surprised that he didn't bring it up. I'm also surprised, by the way, that Biden didn't go after Bernie on this issue as he did in the last debate, because that seems to be the one vulnerability for Bernie Sanders on in a number of ways.
Actually wrote a piece at Free Beacon this week talking about Bernie Sanders' evolution, quote unquote, on the issue, right? Because, you know, this is something that dogged him in 2016. Hillary Clinton said, oh, you know, Bernie's a gun lover and he loves that he supported these NRA-backed bills. You know, Bernie's excuse at the time was, look, I'm a senator from Vermont. We've got a lot of gun owners. This is a very Second Amendment-friendly state. But clearly, since he lost the 2016 nomination, as you say, he's sort of adopted all of the standard Democrat gun control proposals.
Yeah, so I think there's two areas that makes him vulnerable on. One is just the policy aspect. Biden has a very long and consistent record of being very anti-gun or pro-gun control. You know, he was there for the assault weapons ban. He talks about it regularly. He took on the NRA. You know, it's a common talking point for his campaign. So I'm surprised he didn't bring it up again, because Bernie is the front runner. If any of these people forgot, I don't know. Bloomberg is not the front runner. Bloomberg has, you know, there's plenty of reasons for them to go after Bloomberg as well. And they certainly did to probably great effect last night. But there wasn't as much focus on Bernie. Probably the biggest hits were from Bloomberg against Bernie about his three houses. But I was surprised that you didn't see Biden or even Warren or somebody like Warren probably has the most aggressive gun control proposals left in the race, because she basically just adopted all of Cory Booker's gun control schemes earlier in the race. And now that he's gone and all the other more radical people are gone, like Beto and Swalwell, she's probably the most far left on the issue as in terms of policy at this point. But none of them really tried to go after Bernie for the policy issues or for the fact that it cuts against his sort of independent outsider narrative, right? I mean, this was an area where he was actually somewhat independent from the Democratic Party. He was more moderate. He wasn't ever a gun rights champion by any means, but you know, he voted for the lawful commerce in arms, you know, the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, and he opposed the Brady Bill, or at least some aspects of it, back in the 90s, and he had defended that record up through 2016, and now he's basically completely abandoned. He used to talk about how he could be like a bridge on the issue between the more rural areas and more urban areas, or at least the people that represented those areas within the Democratic Party. And now he doesn't do that. Instead, he's introduced a bunch of new gun control legislation that he's co-sponsored in the Senate. And he's pretty much fallen in line rhetorically on the issue since 2016. And he's even openly admitted that he's changed. He told the New York Times editorial board exactly that he's changed on the issue. So, you know, that cuts against his whole, you know, independent outsider persona, which is a big part of what makes him appealing for a lot of people, you know, I think. And so it's a little weird to not see anyone go after that.
It was a little weird. But yeah, you know, what we saw last night, I think, was, you know, each and every candidate had their agenda, and it wasn't necessarily talking about policies. It was, you know, I'm gonna tear down who I think my biggest opponent and my biggest roadblock is. And for the most part, you're right. That meant, you know, a lot of the candidates were directing their rhetorical fire at Michael Bloomberg, who, I mean, let's just talk about this for a second, Stephen. Bloomberg got a little bit better as the debate went on, but you know, the first half of that debate, Bloomberg was awful up on stage, and I think it's no coincidence that the campaign ads for Michael Bloomberg don't feature a lot of Michael Bloomberg talking. It's not Michael Bloomberg looking into the camera. He's got a lot of surrogates who are telling his story and setting his narrative, because, you know, frankly, when you start listening to Michael Bloomberg, I think he turns off a lot of people. I he certainly was not inspiring last night. He was, on the defensive throughout much of the debate. He was annoyed. He was rolling his eyes, and he just comes across to me anyway as a pretty unlikable guy.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed unprepared for the debate. You know, he spent what, $400 million on this race already, without even having his name on the ballot in any of these early states. But apparently didn't spend anything on debate prep, I guess. Or maybe his advisors were too afraid to let him know what it was going to actually be like. I don't know, you know. Obviously, he's been in politics before. I mean, he was the mayor of New York, so he's done debates, presumably. But he seemed totally out of his element and completely unprepared for some of the most obvious like attacks that were going to come from, especially from someone like Elizabeth Warren, who, I mean, that was interesting. She was going after him as like a foil instead of going after Bernie, who's actually in her lane of support. But she did a very good job of highlighting some of the biggest problems that he has, especially those harassment suits with the non-disclosure agreements. She really hammered him on that. And he had no real response to it. And then also stop and frisk, you know, is the same sort of thing where he had no, like he stuck to the strategy of just apologizing, which he's done, like, as far as political apologies go, you know, that's probably how you would want to do it. Don't try to excuse or whatever. Just say, I was wrong. I did this wrong. And then I learned. And I mean, he's tried to say that he stopped the program, which is kind of nonsense. And Biden hit him on that.
Yeah.
A little bit. But yeah, he clearly wasn't ready for primetime. And I was just surprised that, like, why even go? You know, there's no upside for him, it feels like, right? I mean, his whole campaign strategy has just been to stay out of everything and then buy his way to the nomination. And it would seem to be working fairly well. Certainly got him into second or third place nationally and in a number of these states that are coming up. And so what, I don't even know what the upside for him being there was supposed to be. If this is your strategy, then why not stick to it? Just stay out of talking to the other candidates and just flood the airwaves with your, you know, edited positive messages.
Yeah. I mean, I know that his campaign had said, we want to be there. We want to be on the debate stage. He has given a ton of money to the DNC. And, you know, coincidentally, they changed the metrics for who can make the debate after Bloomberg made that donation. So you're right. I mean, I think he wanted to be there for whatever reason. And, you know, look, as bad as Bloomberg's performance was, he's not on the ballot in Nevada this Saturday for the caucus. He's not going to be on the ballot in South Carolina. Really, the first time that Americans are going to have the chance to vote for Bloomberg is March the 3rd, Super Tuesday. So there'll be another debate, you know, before then. I think some of what you saw last night is probably going to end up in some Trump campaign ads if Bloomberg becomes the nominee. Sure. But I think for the most part, you know, the news cycle's going to move on. And this was not, you know, as bad as his performance was last night, it's not going to knock him out of the race, for goodness sake. So, you know, he'll probably spend $75 million. He'll get, maybe he'll resurrect, you know, the bodies of Lincoln and Douglas and have them give him some debate tactics going forward. But I think he probably viewed this as practice and probably felt like, well, they're not going to be able to do enough damage to me to make it not worth my while. I think time will tell. But it was not an impressive debut for Michael Bloomberg at all. I mean, at this point, Stephen, do you see Bernie Sanders as I think right now he's the, you know, leading in the Democrat polls. Does he have, in your opinion, the gas to make it to the convention, become the nominee, or do you think that Bloomberg and you know, the quote unquote establishment wing of the Democrat Party are going to try to stop him, even if he has this delegate lead? Are we going to see a sort of a repeat of 2016 where Bernie Sanders supporters felt like their guy really should have been the nominee, but it was stolen?
You know, I mean, to me, so far watching everything, it does feel like a repeat of 2016, but not necessarily on the Democratic side. This looks more like Trump and how that race went, because even last night, you know, Bernie's at this point is the clear front runner and the one who has the best odds of getting the most delegates, even if it's not clear that he could capture a majority that's needed. Mm-hmm. But he seems the most likely to be able to get to a majority and most likely to have at least a plurality. They asked him that question last night of like, if no one gets a majority, do you think the person with the delegate lead should become the nominee? And you notice that all of the candidates except for Bernie said no. Yeah. He said yes, which gives away that all of them think he's going to have the plurality. And he also thinks that. So it's weird to watch because then he wasn't the main target. Bloomberg was the main target of the night. And at the same time, he's a fairly weak front runner, like Trump was in 2016, in terms of, you know, he would win a lot of states, but by like, you know, 35 or 40 to whatever, you know, he wouldn't necessarily get a majority until later on. And then, you know, candidates stayed in all the way basically to the convention and Republican side. And that seems like something that could definitely happen this time around, but it was ultimately a futile thing in 2016 for Republicans for like Ted Cruz to stay in that long because Trump still won. It's hard to go into a convention, I think, and in this day and age, the way that the parties work now, they're incredibly weak institutions, basically, you know, we could easily have a situation where, you know, Trump, who was really not a Republican until maybe 2012, and then Bernie, who has literally never been a Democrat, and still is not a Democrat, could be the leaders of both these parties, or Bloomberg. You know, Pete had a pretty good line about sort of the weak that gives away the weakness of the parties right now, mm-hmm. which was that, you know, he either have someone who wants to burn down the party getting the nomination in Bernie, or somebody who wants to buy it out in Bloomberg, who was, when he was mayor, was a Republican, the only time he was elected official. So it'll be interesting to see how this all goes. My feeling is that, like, unless somebody like Biden who can make some sort of huge recovery, because who appeals to like a wide swath of Democratic voters, it's hard to see how Bernie doesn't win the nomination, but also it's easy to see a scenario where he doesn't get a majority of the delegates and it's a total mess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And I thought last night was probably Biden's best debate performance. I mean, that's not saying much.
It wasn't like incredible, though. So,
exactly right. It was his best debate performance, but it wasn't like people walked away from watching that going, wow, Joe Biden really turned it around. I mean, he was fine. And you know, the stories of Bloomberg, who has been courting Joe Biden's donors, basically telling him, look, I don't want your money. I just want your support to try to dry up that campaign cash for Biden. I imagine some of them are now, you know, there was reports yesterday that a lot of them were thinking about leaving Biden and going to Bloomberg. After last night's debate, I imagine a lot of them are back on the fence now and thinking, well, you know, Biden looked better than Bloomberg last night.
I think a lot of it will come down to what happens here in Nevada. Because the problem for Biden is like the firewall strategy almost never works, right? Mm-hmm. That's what Rudy tried to do in Florida, right? And the problem is your campaign has to survive through that to get to the firewall. And for Biden, you know, he had terrible performances in Iowa and New Hampshire. And now if he doesn't do well in Nevada, like second place, at least, I mean, I don't want to prognosticate too specifically, but it right. seems to me if he doesn't do well in Nevada, that trajectory of like, oh, he's the most electable continues to nosedive. If you can't make it through three, you know, elections doing poorly and then still hold on to that most electable title, which is what his campaign is built around.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he performs well in Nevada, if he has like a better than expected performance, that's fairly high up, second place or something, third place, maybe, I don't know. But, and then he wins South Carolina, then everything changes and you could see him becoming, you know, a real contender to actually win the nomination again. But if things continue to trend the way they have, then it's like, who knows what happens?
It's, I, you know, listen, I mean, we're all kind of just watching here to see, and you're right. I mean, there is, I think, a distinct possibility that that we get to the end of the nominating process and none of the candidates have actually got the required number of delegates. I don't know that we're going to see a contested convention, but I mean, it certainly is a possibility at this point.
Be in a good spot, I'd say that much.
Well, yeah, you know, and again, Bloomberg is sort of hanging around, you know, he'll be spending tens of millions of dollars a week on his campaign ads, but he won't really be on the ballot until Super Tuesday. So, you know, we've got a couple weeks to see.
Why get involved? Like, you're not even on the ballot for a while. Just stay out of it all. It's been helping you because you're viewed as like the pristine alternative that, you know, hasn't taken any hits yet. So,
yeah,
I mean, separate from everyone. Why get in?
And I do wonder if he's thinking this morning that there was a mistake to be there on stage, maybe to have said, listen, we just found out a day and a half ago that we qualified for the debate, but I haven't had a chance to do any debate prep. So I'll see y'all in South Carolina. That might have been the wiser strategy for Bloomberg, but hindsight's 2020. One more Bloomberg question before we let you go here, and I noted this last night. Shannon Watts was watching the Democrat debate, and she had something to say about every candidate up on stage, with the exception of Michael Bloomberg. She didn't say much about that guy for some reason, and it just struck me that, you know, we actually haven't seen a lot of gun control advocates come out and endorse Michael Bloomberg. Even Shannon Watts is not, she's you know, obviously tweeted and talked supportively about the guy who funds Moms Demand Action, but she hasn't come out and said, I'm backing Bloomberg all the way. You haven't seen, you know, your Moms Demand Action chapters who have been showing up at these Bloomberg events. Does the media pick up on that at some point, that, you know, Bloomberg may have provided the financial backing for these organizations, but it doesn't really seem like, you know, the members of these groups have embraced him?
That's an interesting question, you know, because, yeah, I mean, even as he shot up in the polling, you haven't seen you haven't seen a lot of endorsements at all for him, I guess, but
Members of Congress, and you know, you've got a lot of mayors rolling out. I mean, he's rolling out every day, like, hey, look, this person's endorsement, this person's endorsement.
Yeah,
but you haven't.
One is like is Nutter from the former Philly mayor.
Yeah,
because he's on. That's who he sends out a lot. But either way, it's interesting question about the bigger gun control names like Shannon Watts. Why aren't they basically just part of his campaign? Seems like it would be an easy transition to go from one of his, you know, nonprofit groups over to one of his campaigns, or over to his campaign. And you haven't seen that. And I do wonder why. You know, at some point, it does become a liability, right? Like, and it must be a very awkward position, honest, for any. And this is how, you know, political operatives, that's the life they lead. But obviously, she can't go out and criticize him either. That's actually been a very major point of contention on the left about Bloomberg over the years. It's like, mm-hmm. You can't criticize him because he bankrolls so much of the liberal like nonprofit world that, you know, if you have a problem with him, tough, I guess. So,
well, that's right. I mean, you know, so it's funny to actually, you know, watch them all beat up on Bloomberg for his spending last night, but nobody said anything about, you know, just like when you went into Virginia and you bought the election for Democrats. I mean, there's some things that they absolutely hate about his spending, and then there are some mm-hmm. things that they're just not even going to bring up because has benefited them and their party for so long.
To be fair, that happens, you know, across the political spectrum. But you know, you certainly do notice, especially in the gun control world, that when the NRA was outspending the gun control groups, the talk was all about how they were buying politicians. Mm-hmm. That was forever. That was the talking point. And then when it flipped and the gun control groups started outspending the NRA, like in Virginia, like in 2018, mainly funded by one person, frankly, which would seem to fit that whole money in politics is bad narrative. They switched the talking point to, look how much we're outspending the NRA. It's great. We're winning because we're outspending them. So, you know, there's a lot you have to take with a grain of salt when you're talking to political operatives on any from any persuasion. But certainly that's been a noticeable flip for the gun control advocates in recent years.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Stephen, I appreciate you coming on the program. Go check out Stephen's article about Bernie Sanders' flip-flops on the Second Amendment at the Washington Free Beacon. And I will be up there in the D.C. area next week for CPAC, so hopefully I'll get a chance to see you up there.
Yeah, let's hang out.
All right, man, we'll do it. Stephen Gutowski, the Washington Free Beacon, with us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. All right, let's turn our attention now to our armed citizen story of the day, our good deed of the day. Our recidivist report of the day, don't like this one, from Bedford Township, Michigan, where a man is accused of beating and beheading his step-grandmother. I know, this is awful. Fox 2 in Detroit says that Kenny Wayne McBride was first arrested on February 17th, taken into custody after police found 79-year-old Cecilia Gibson dead. That is his step-grandmother. He was in court for the first time. The prosecutor in Monroe County, Michigan, said the defendant is alleged to have viciously beaten his 80-year-old step-grandmother and then decapitating her. He said, obviously, it is a very gruesome and troubling crime, to be sure. Kenny McBride, as prosecutors has a lengthy criminal history, including, but not limited to, a 2007 sentence, when he was convicted of malicious destruction of fire or police property, as well as assault or resisting an officer. But the prosecutor actually said that his criminal history dates back, quote, nearly 20 years, 5 felonies, 3 misdemeanor convictions, felony convictions, including weapons convictions, for which he, quote, served a stint in prison. He also apparently has several cases out of Monroe County that I guess are open cases at the moment, including felonious assault and assault with a deadly weapon. Now, of course, he's facing murder charges, and one of the questions that can and should be raised is, why was Kenny McBride out living there with his step-grandmother when he should have been sharing a prison cell with a roommate instead? Our armed citizen story of the day from Coleman, Alabama, where a woman protected herself from a would-be burglar, actually ended up holding the suspect at gunpoint for police. I love these stories with a happy ending. This was in the southeast part of the city. WBRC in Memphis reporting that one of the police spokesmen in Coleman, Alabama, said it was back on February 13th, Coleman officers got multiple calls of a man wandering around homes. They located a guy named Chad Stephen Doherty around 6 o'clock in the morning outside of a home on 11th Street, southeast in Coleman, Alabama. An officer saw a woman was holding Doherty at gunpoint inside the home. They say that he then ran out the door and into the custody of the Coleman, Alabama Police Department. Save me from the mistakes that I have made, in other words, and take me into custody, but don't leave me in there with that woman who's holding a gun to me. Doherty did not have a weapon. Officers on scene were concerned that Doherty might OD because they say that he was on drugs. He was taken to the hospital for treatment. He's now been charged with 2 counts of third-degree burglary. The woman who protected herself against Doherty inside her home is not facing any charges, obviously. No shots were fired like most offensive gun uses. The presence of that firearm was enough to prevent even the apparently drug-addled suspect from escalating his crime any further. Now, on to our good deed of the day. Fremont, California, where a man is behind bars now, or at least, well, he's been charged. He's probably, given this fact that this is California, he's probably already out on bond. But he was arrested and charged after a violent sexual assault at a gym in Fremont, California, that was actually thwarted by a Good Samaritan. Channel 4 KRON in San Francisco with the story. They say that a woman was taking part in a workout class, and she, along with other gym members, were doing push-ups when 33-year-old Jonathan Anderson came into the class, pushed the victim to the ground, pulled her clothes down, held her to the ground, and tried to sexually assault her. I mean, again, this is at a gym with lots of other people around in the middle of a workout class. Michael Gebhardt with the Fremont Police Department says the suspect was a lot bigger than her. He laid on top of her, used his body weight to push her down, sexually assaulted her. He's listed as 6'1", 255. He was pushed off the screaming victim by a Good Samaritan who stood between Anderson and the victim to prevent anything else from happening, then followed him up to the front of the gym. When officers arrived, Anderson was immediately taken into custody. KRON says he's actually remained in custody since his arrest. So, will wonders never cease? Anderson confessed to the assault while being interviewed, according to police. They also say that Anderson was on active probation in California for two prior convictions, one for DUI, one for grand theft. Lieutenant Michael Tegner with the Fremont Police Department says that the department, quote, wishes to thank the Good Samaritan for intervening in the attack. Their quick action stopped the surrendered assault and aided in the suspect's quick arrest. It took bravery and courage to intervene. And so in the right place at the right time, willing and able to help a woman in need, whoever that Good Samaritan in Fremont, California is, we thank you for your very good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Now, don't forget, tomorrow is Friday. I don't know, you probably didn't need a reminder about that. Typically, we like to check in with you on Friday's Cam and Company. So if you've got any questions, any comments, anything you want to sound off on in the world of the Second Amendment, just shoot me an email, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. That is the best email address to use. And we will get to your comments and your questions, and you'll keep me company on the next edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Until then, thanks so much for tuning in. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the program at Town Hall Media on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, townhall.com's podcast page, and more. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll see you back here tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.